This stock and commodity report is made possible with support from Grainfield Marketing in Normal. Grainfield Marketing can be reached at 1-800-383-4647 or on the internet at grainfield.com.
Welcome to the Closing Market Report. It's December the 16th, 2005. I'm Todd Gleason. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Mike Zuzulo of Risk Management Commodities Incorporated in Lafayette, Indiana. And later this half hour, we'll discuss the cash grain market with Bruce Bostert. He's with FCC Futures in Williamsville, Illinois. Well, the haggling continues at the Doha round of the WTO in Hong Kong, and not much is getting done. The first shipment of U.S. beef has arrived in Japan, and get this, there's a little less than 5 tons of meat there, and it's only for internal testing by meat buyers. And they're not looking for BSE. You've got to hear the rest of that story and many others when Dave Dickey brings us the details of today's agricultural news. Well, just after the bottom of the hour, climatologist Steve Hilberg will join us to take a look at the weather here in the Midwest. And in between, we'll hear about the January Corn and Soybean Classic Series. These are the crop production meetings that bring campus-based specialists to 6 sites around the state of Illinois. They're in their 9th season, and we're hopeful it will be the best ever. Stay with us for this Friday edition of your Closing Market Report.
The Closing Market Report is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming on AM 580 as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM 580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn specialists, on the web at a6395.com and at agrigold.com.
In Kansas City on this Friday afternoon, futures finished the day like this. For the hard red winter wheat, the March contract up a penny at 367.5. From the Chicago Board of Trade, March soft red winter wheat settled at 319.75. It was up a penny for the day. May contract at 328.75, up a quarter. The March futures in the corn pit at 207.5 were up 2.75 today. May futures at 216.25, up 2.25, and July contract at $2.25.25. It finished 2.75 higher. December corn futures up 2 cents at 244.75 for 2006. That's the red December contract. Soybeans January contract 592.25, up 5. March futures at 602.5, up 4.5. And the May soybeans at $6.10.5, up 4.25. November at 623.25, up 2.5 cents. January bean meal 191.40, up $4. January bean oil down 10 at 21.30. From the Mercantile Exchange, January feeder cattle at 114.32.5, they were up 50. And December live cattle at 95.52.5 were up $1.20. Lean hogs finished the February contract at $64.32.5, and they were off a nickel for the day.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Joining us now to take a look at what happened at the Chicago Board of Trade in the Mercantile Exchange is Mike Zuzulo of Risk Management Commodities Incorporated out of Lafayette, Indiana, but in studio with us this afternoon. Good to have you here, Mike.
It is awesome to be here. I'll do this once a week.
Well, and once a week you should do it, and Friday would be a great day. You can come over anytime you'd like. In fact, you're here because we're putting together a program this evening, not only for tonight for Commodity Week, which will air on tomorrow here on AM 580 at 11:30, but for the following week and the week after that as well, for Christmas Day and New Year's Day. We're certainly glad to have you on hand. What's the best set of advice you've given out this week, whether it be pertaining to corn, wheat, soybeans, hogs, another commodity?
That's a great question. I guess probably for us, Todd, it was the issue of whether November beans can get to that 625 level, which we pegged as overvalue when it comes to our analysis. And we were very happy that it got there because we don't mind selling 20% here and doing a bull call spread to protect ourselves after the sale. We have been talking to producers a lot this week in Danville at the Lawhoffs or Bungie. They're right now around 15 cents underneath the fall delivery for November beans. So quite a bit of sale potential there, especially on that first 20%. So we're very happy going into Christmas that we're starting at a price level that some really didn't think could happen.
You know, you take a look at that November bean contract, 623.25, the settlement price today, they were up 2.5, but there's nothing above that until about 640. Are you hopeful that this market might rally more?
Nothing except January beans. That's the only problem, is it seems like for both beans and corn, we really need to kickstart the market in terms of the technicals and the index funds coming in and buying. We're certainly hopeful that that'll happen, especially after the first of the year. We do have to kind of take a step back and realize the holidays are right around the corner, not just ours, but the Asian holidays. holiday as well and the Asian New Year, that tends to always kind of suck the volatility and the volume out of the trade, and it makes for a pretty skittish marketplace.
Dave Dickey just entered the studio and handed me the changes for the week, which is what we use on Commodity Week. Some fairly interesting numbers to take a look at here. The beans were up in the January contract, 23.25 from last Friday's settlement price. July futures were up 28 cents. Here are a couple of good ones. July corn up 4 cents. But if you take a look at the lead option corn futures, the March contract, and it did finish higher for the week. And that March contract compared to the December, which had gone off this week, was up 17.75 from the week. Now, this is probably some important news because as we take a look at those numbers, what's generally happened in the last several months is that after expiration, there's been about 12 cents in terms of the spread between the expiring month and the new lead option. That was the case, but it's always traded lower. This time around, it looks like she's going to gain for a bit for the week, and maybe that could turn things around a little more than some had expected.
Yeah, you know, that March number really does surprise me. We'll have to take a look at that later on because that's a big jump. We felt like that the Dease could make a stand and not have to go off the board too much lower than $2, but we weren't sure whether the March could really keep on going higher. And you know, these numbers are impressive. I will have to say, though, when we talked to board trade contacts after the close, they were especially disappointed with the corn. Some of the longs that we talked to early in the morning turned, you know, flat after 15 minutes of trade and actually are looking to sell the market on Monday just because of the lack of follow-through. I think we hit the 50-day moving average in March corn 4 out of the last 5 days and just couldn't penetrate it. So kind of a switch in psychology we're a little bit nervous about, but those numbers are certainly nice for this week. And, you know, it certainly bodes well for producers that need to make catch-up sales because we are real concerned about end-of-the-year cash flow selling, first of, you know, next year cash flow selling, and, you know, kind of a glut coming towards the market.
There's always a little fear as we go into Christmas and New Year's week, mostly because it's very low volume, which means if anybody really gets in and trades very much, the volatility can be pretty great. Expectations for next week or the week after?
Well, we'd have to say without the KC wheat leading the wheat complex in Chicago higher, then we'd probably have a tough time in the corn market given what our board contacts told us. And one of the things that we really didn't like about the beans on the close was that we couldn't penetrate that 602 level, and we talked this morning about really needing to do that. Wanting to do it. We're not giving up on the market. Don't get us wrong by that, but it does set us up for a negative tone coming into Sunday night's trade, especially given there wasn't really any fundamentally bearish news that came across the news wires to take us off our highs like we, you know, happen to do late in the day. It just seemed like the end of the week profit taking, guys wondering whether this is it. Maybe some guys going home for Christmas at this point.
Tell me, we've had, I think, maybe five or six of our analysts, and I don't know whether you're in this crew or not, telling us that this is a good place, that they ought to have market orders in and they ought to be selling corn at these types of levels. Have you been in that area or not?
For old crop in March, we certainly want to, you know, make headway if we get above 210 and go towards that gap around 220, 225. But for Dease, we're not hedging at all. We're, in fact, buying December corn call, bull call verticals right now in anticipation of something kicking this corn market up higher, whether it's the wheat being undervalued or whether it's a fight between the new crop acres. And, you know, that's a real sensitive issue coming in the next 75 days for us, is that if November beans can hold on to 625 and even get up to 650 price level on a fund-driven rally, we would think that as long as, you know, natural gas prices aren't falling out of bed, Dease corn's going to have to start moving higher to, you know, keep the acres up.
And then one other question about beans, because we certainly have a good crop, it appears, coming on in South America. How much pressure might this put onto the bean market, and when would that come?
That's a good question. I wish we really knew the answer. I guess the way we're looking at it in our analysis right now is we're going to see a clash of the titans, the funds versus the fundamentals. The most likely scenario we could see is the funds come in and buy, meaning the index funds, between now and the end of the first quarter of 06. But after that, really the fundamentals start to overpower the market. I think the real big issue right now we have to look at if we're producers is we're dealing with about 60 to 65 cents premium in November beans right now versus last year at this time, and that's given 1.5 times the carryover and a pretty weak export pace right now. So we don't want to overplay our hand if we're hedgers, And if this is the first sale we make and it's the worst price of the year, we're going to be pretty happy.
Mike, thanks for joining us today.
Thanks, Todd. Merry Christmas.
And Merry Christmas to you. We'll talk again to Mike this evening during our Commodity Week program. You can pick that up after 6 o'clock on our website at WILL.UIUC.edu, or certainly by listening tomorrow at 11:30 a.m. Mike joins us here on the Closing Market Report on Friday afternoons.
Today's broadcast is made possible with support from First Midwest Bank, serving the banking needs of Illinois' agricultural community with locations in Champaign, Danville, Galesburg, Morris, and McHenry. More information is available from Chip Jorstad in Morris at 815-941-3706. First Midwest Bank, member FDIC, an equal housing lender.
Taking a look now at the weather forecast from our own Ed Keezer. He's calling in northern Indiana for cloudy skies, some snow showers and flurries. Elsewhere, he says it'll be partly to mostly cloudy. Lows will range from 8 in northwestern Illinois to 25 in the far south. Tomorrow, Ed says, in northern Indiana, cloudy, snow showers. Elsewhere, a mix of clouds, some sunshine. Highs ranging tomorrow from 20 in northwestern Illinois to 43 in the far south. Dave Dickey will be here in a moment with a look and today's agricultural news.
In agricultural news, at the Doha World Free Trade meetings in Hong Kong, India and other developing nations say they must get a commitment for the timely elimination of export subsidies on farm goods by the U.S. and European Union before agreeing to greater market access. EU Trade Commissioner Peter Mandelson yesterday rejected a set date for the end of export subsidies, and then he fired another round at the U.S. to respond to Europe's offer on export subsidies.
Our offer from the European Union is still on the table. We will eliminate our export refunds completely at a certain date and front-loading this in the prior period, provided that the phasing out is matched by a corresponding phasing out of all forms of export subsidization in others' programs.
But developing nations say they would accept a U.S. plan that would eliminate export subsidies by 2010, although what qualifies as a subsidy is yet to be defined. Mandelson says he's seen no willingness from the U.S. and other nations to address Europe's trade concerns, putting a deal in doubt.
We've had no offers, no matching offers, on the issue of state trading enterprises, export credits or food aid from Australia, New Zealand, Canada and the United States. Indeed, in most cases, these countries have described action as, quote, a distraction or, quote, an intrusion or as, quote, an obsession by the European Union. So we await others to come round to what they need to do so that we can proceed in parallel or not at all.
Meanwhile, U.S. Trade Representative Rob Portman is conceding the Hong Kong meetings won't push the Doha round forward, and he's calling for ministers to meet again in Geneva by March 31st. Since the meeting opened on Tuesday, ministers have spent more time criticizing each other's positions than they have at the negotiating table. Ministers have yet to engage in any significant market access talks on agriculture, nor have they made any progress on manufacturing or services. Yesterday, the National Cotton Council, Oxfam International, and West African cotton farmers joined together to oppose Portman's announcement that the U.S. would eliminate duty and quota restrictions on cotton imports from least developed nations. And this morning, cotton, banana, and sugar growers in Africa, the Caribbean, and Pacific region said they would reject any global trade deal that eliminates its preferential access to European markets. The U.S. Trade Promotion Authority expires in July of 2007, and there's been talk in Hong Kong that the date will need to be extended. The first shipment of U.S. beef in nearly 2 years arrived today in Japan. About 4.6 tons of meat, including strip sirloin and chuck eye cuts, arrived for internal testing by meat buyers, who say they need to see how it tastes and how tender it is. Japan reopened its border to U.S. cattle under 21 months of age on Monday. In a preliminary ruling released yesterday, the Canada Border Service Agency says U.S. grain imports to Canada are dumped and subsidized. Duties totaling $1.65 per bushel will be imposed immediately on U.S. corn to prevent further injury to Canadian corn growers. Canadian Corn Producers Coalition spokesperson Brian Doge says the amount of the duty shows the severity of the injury done to Canada's corn farmers by U.S. farm programs.
All you have to do is realize that Canadian net farm income for all of Canadian agriculture has been negative 5 of the last 6 years when you take government support programs out of the picture. So there's something wrong with the situation. And what we allege is that the finding today confirms what the problem really is that the U.S. Farm Bill artificially distorts and depresses commodity prices, particularly for grains and oilseeds. That's not fair. It's not right. And the decision today confirmed us in our belief.
The decision affects unprocessed grain corn, but excludes seed corn, sweet corn, popping corn, and corn that has been milled. A final decision regarding anti-dumping and countervailing duties on U.S. corn is due next March. Then it will be up to the Canadian International Trade Tribunal to make a final injury finding, at which time the provisional duties could become permanent. USDA Secretary Mike Johans criticized the Canadian ruling. Speaking from Hong Kong, Johans said the U.S. was disappointed, noting imports of corn into Canada are down the past 2 years. Thus far this marketing year, U.S. corn exporters have sent Canada 19.4 million bushels. USDA Chief Economist Keith Collins says a quarter of the nation's corn crop may go toward ethanol use in the not-too-distant future. Collins, who spoke at this week's Energy from Agriculture Conference in St. Louis, says that level of domestic corn use has real potential to improve corn prices.
I can remember when corn grind for ethanol use was 2 or 3% of corn production. This year it's 14, 15%. Over the next couple of years, just knowing what we know about ethanol production capacity coming online, it can be 20 to 25%. This can make a difference in corn prices.
Collins says there's been a long-term trend toward fewer U.S. wheat acres and that increased competition from South America will likely cut into U.S. soybean acres in the future. Collins says the expanding U.S. ethanol industry and resulting higher corn prices will amplify those trends and will boost U.S. corn acres in the long term, largely at the expense of soybeans and wheat. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
Thanks, Dave. Dave Dickey, of course, your Director of Agricultural Programming here at the WILL radio stations. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason, the host of the Closing Market Report and Commodity Week. Well, up next, the University of Illinois will put its first team of crop production on the road in January. We'll hear more about the day-long meeting series called the Corn and Soybean Classic. This is the ninth year for the Corn and Soybean Classic series from the University of Illinois. It was intentionally designed to bring the best information from the Agricultural College on campus to producers around the state of Illinois. Extension entomologist Mike Gray is one of eight speakers scheduled for each of the five-day-long regional meetings. He says the speakers will talk for no more than half an hour and will get right to the point of a topic expected to be of most interest for corn and soybean producers.
We located these meetings in upscale venues and really tried to make sure that a producer could come in one day, get what we think is a first-class proceedings, have an opportunity to interact with a number of specialists, pathologists, entomologists, weed scientists, crop production specialists, in some cases ag engineers, ag economists, get a lot of information in one day, have an opportunity to interact with these folks. And we think for a very reasonable fee.
Pre-registration is $35 if completed online by January 4th or by phone by December the 23rd. A walk-in registration for each of the six sites is $50 for the day. The fee includes donuts and coffee in the morning, lunch, and a full proceedings booklet. Online or website registration can be completed by clicking the Conferences tab at www.ipm.uiuc.edu.
You're correct. We have six locations this year, beginning on January the 10th in Bloomington, January 11 in Malta, the the 12th, we will be up at the Mark in Moline. That'll take care of the first week, and then the following week, we will be at the Crown Plaza in Springfield on January 17, the Holiday Inn in Mount Vernon on January 18, and then we will conclude the 2006 Corn and Soybean Classic sessions on the 19th of January at the Holiday Inn in Collinsville.
Gray is hopeful 2006 will repeat the all-time record attendance of the program set last year, something north of 1,300 farmers and agribusiness professionals. Those who choose to make this year's meeting will hear from Mike Gray, Emerson Nafziger, Daryl Good, Kevin Steffi, Gary Schnittke, Aaron Hager, Terry Niblack, and Suzanne Bissonnette. From the University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason.
Carl Center for Rural Health and Farm Safety, a division of Carl Foundation Hospital, is proud to underwrite agricultural programming at WILL. The center helps residents of rural communities with education and training in farm safety. For more information, call 217-383-4606.
Hi, you're listening to The Information Advantage. This is WILL Urbana. It's a broadcasting service of the College of Communications here on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois. Well, we checked in this afternoon to see whether Bruce Bostard of FCC Futures out of Williamsville Farmers Co-op in Williamsville, Illinois, was available. Bruce actually unavailable this afternoon in a meeting off-site. So we started making some quick phone calls, and if I am lucky enough, we'll have Brian Maple on with us. He is with F.C. Stone & Company out of Indianapolis, Indiana. Hi, Brian. Good afternoon to you.
Hey, Todd. How you doing?
I'm very well. Glad that you were able to be with us this afternoon. I wanted to ask you very quickly about something that Dave Dickey had brought in to Mike Zuzulo and I as we were having our conversation about the futures market this afternoon. And it's the lead option chart on the corn, which was up, I think, 17¾ cents from last Friday to this Friday on that weekly chart. That probably looks awfully good. Last Friday on the Deese contract, I believe it was 189¾ a settlement price for the week. This week, lead option March contract at 207½. What do you make of those numbers?
I make very little of that myself, Mike. I mean, you're going to have that in carry markets when we have a tremendous carry, which we do in corn and beans as far as that's concerned. When you get a nice carry out here, you're going to see a big jump on your weeklies when the December goes out off the market or whenever the nearby expires, and we're going to see that probably most of the way through this year with a carry. The thing I look at on there is if you go back on that weekly chart and look and see where we were at here just, it's going to be back in October. Mm-hmm. Our highs were 209½. to as much as 210, and that's exactly what we're struggling with today, is trying to get through that 209½ to 210 level. You get through there, and it probably gives you the impetus to try and make a run to fill that gap at 217½.
Man, you're holding off on cash sales to that point, and are you pulling the trigger then?
Actually, I'm selling some cash corn, small crop corn that we've got good yields on. We've seen tremendous basis appreciation out here, and I'm letting them have a little bit. And then I'm going to wait and see whether we can go up here and try and fill that gap. But at 217½, I'd probably have the lion's share of my corn already sold at that point.
Anything on the beans before I let you go for the day?
Well, the beans were an interesting trade this week. You ran out of the gates on Monday morning. We spent the rest of the week trying to justify it. And it certainly looks like it's big money that's driving it at this point. The fundamentals certainly don't back it up. So here again, I'm letting them have some beans. We can't seem to get through the $6 mark. And until we do, I think I continue to sell some beans and look for a chance to buy some calls later down the road.
Brian, thanks for filling in on short notice. We sure appreciate that.
Thanks, Todd.
Brian Maple is with F.C. Stone out of Indianapolis, Indiana. He generally joins us here on the pre-opening market report on Monday afternoons, filling in this afternoon for Bruce Bostard of FCC Futures, who was away for the day. Up next, your local newscast in 2 minutes. We'll talk with the folks out at the Midwestern Regional Climate Center about the agricultural weather for the day.
With this look at AM 580 News, I'm Jim Meadows. 27-year-old Maurice Wallace of Normal pleaded innocent today to killing Illinois State University student Olamide Adeyoye. Wallace did not speak this morning during a brief hearing at McLean County Circuit Court. Fallen media mogul Conrad Black and another former executive pleaded innocent today to new charges in the alleged looting of more than $80 million from Chicago Sun-Times publisher Hollinger International. A federal judge set a trial date of March 5, 2007. Federal investigators say a Southwest Airlines jet that slid off a Midway Airport runway and into a city street last week needed about 800 more feet of runway to come to a safe stop. A Chicago Department of Aviation spokeswoman says the department has confidence in the federal report. Indiana officials think Illinois' travel slogan is stealing their state's thunder, so they plan to change it. For 7 years, Indiana's had the slogan, "Enjoy Indiana," but tourism officials say it's being overshadowed by the Illinois slogan, which is "Enjoy Illinois." Governor Mitch Daniels says the state of Indiana has located more than 40,000 people who didn't know they had money in the state's Public Employees Retirement Fund. The accounts total around $116 million. Daniel says the state has lost contact with the people, some of them for more than 20 years. The state of Indiana now has a website where former employees can check on their retirement funds. In Park County, Indiana, a covered bridge destroyed in April by an arsonist will be rebuilt starting in January. County officials say they'll use historically correct materials, including poplar trees hewn to replace the charred frame of the 245-foot-long Bridgeton Bridge. Groundbreaking for the new bridge is scheduled for January 12th at the site, about 15 miles northeast of Terre Haute. I'm Jim Meadows, AM 580 News.
And I'm Todd Gleason, AM 580 Agriculture. You're listening to The Information Advantage. This is WILL Urbana. It's a broadcasting service of the College of Communications here on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois. We're joined now by Steve Hilberg, the director of the Midwestern Regional Climate Center at the Illinois State Water Survey in Champaign. Hi, Steve.
Good afternoon, Todd.
Good afternoon to you. Tell me about the weather for the weekend to begin with.
Well, it looks like we'll continue with this wintry weather pattern we've had for the last 2 weeks, for at least another several days. This weekend, tomorrow shouldn't be too bad. Just cold and generally nothing more than that. And then Sunday, Saturday night into Sunday, there could be a weak weather system moving through the southern half of the Midwest, affecting Missouri, southern, central and southern Illinois, and central and southern Indiana. That might bring us some light snow. Whatever occurs will, again, be very light. Could present a few minor travel problems by midday West Sunday, but we're not talking about a major system by any means. So once that scoots out, it looks like next week should be fairly quiet.
We were talking earlier in the week about a fairly good Arctic cold blast possibly this week, and then it started to slow down and moved backwards. Are we still looking at that, or has that dissipated?
No, there will be a little surge of cold air the early part of this next week, but by about Thursday, we're going to start seeing things moderate. The atmosphere is going to sort of relax, if you might say, and pattern will go a little bit more what we call zonal, more west to east, and we'll be able to get some milder air in here toward the end of the week. White Christmas around here, and you know, the central parts of Illinois and Indiana might be a long shot now if the warm weather comes. But right now, it looks like we'll get a little break. I'm not convinced it's going to be a long-lasting break. We may be getting back into the cold weather after Christmas, but it looks like a fairly quiet week ahead. And again, a little bit more moderate temperatures for this time of year.
And as you take a look back as we close out this 2005 year, most striking climatological features of the year?
Probably the biggest thing around here is that persistent area of drought in the northwestern part of Illinois and adjacent portions of the other states there. It's just been it's been hanging in tough, and it hasn't gone away. It was much bigger during parts of the summer, and then it eroded the southern edges of it, basically disappeared. But very persistent in northwestern Illinois, and it's something we're keeping an eye on because we don't particularly want to keep that going into the planting season.
We appreciate you being with us.
All right, Todd.
Steve Hilberg is with the Midwestern Regional Climate Center. It's located here in Champaign County at the Illinois State Water Survey.
Agricultural information on AM 580 is made possible with support from Lincoln Land Agri-Energy in Palestine, Illinois, producing a renewable fuel with corn bought directly from the farmer. More information at 800-586-2321 or online at lincolnlandagrienergy.com.
That is today's Closing Market Report. Remember to join us tomorrow morning at 11:30 for Commodity Week. It's our weekly analysis of what's happening in agriculture If you can't just to wait, you can pick it up tonight after about 6 o'clock on our website at WILL.UIUC.edu. Click on AM and then Agriculture. I'm Todd Gleason. Have a good and a very safe weekend.